Hello and welcome to the After Things podcast. My name is Andrew Main and I am joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, 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 hello.
Brian, you're a hero to me.
What? Yeah, I don't get that. First of all, that is high praise, sir.
You know, and it's well earned. And I would say that it is at our point in our careers, it becomes very easy to be complacent and to become carbon copies of ourselves. And to just sort of do less, figure out where things work and do the things, only things that work, do less of that, whatever. But, you know, you've built a business, you employ people, you have a family, you have a fan base, you've done this. And amidst all of this, you realize how fast, you've always known the world changes fast. You've been taking time to really embrace generative AI and coding and to do these things. And watching you just pop up and do a thing, and not toy problems, but real problems from a business point of view, is inspiring.
Well, I appreciate that. It's hard. I mean, that's part of, you know, in our discussions, a thing that I keep trying to express is how much I don't blame anybody who is just overwhelmed by it all. And indeed, like if you have a gig, all things being equal, we want to keep our gig because it is comfortable. It is extremely hard to wrap your mind around shaking things up. Now, in my case, enough things, it was time to change that I hit kind of a reshuffle moment. Maybe turning 50 had something to do with it, but it's hard. And among those things is getting over the deep concerns I have about privacy and about the information that I feed my own mind and all that stuff. I don't know. When ChatGPT announced, hey, you can talk to your money now, I was like, oh man, I'm really intrigued. And it was on the other side of, thankfully, a Plaid third-party connector, which somehow made me feel much, much better about it. I don't know why.
Do you want to give people context on that?
Yeah. Well, basically, I mentioned like a money question and it said, hey, you do the $200 a month pro plan. You can now talk to your money. You connect all of your accounts. You connect your bank accounts. You connect your checking and savings and credit cards and money markets and your IRAs or whatever. And I'm like, but then what? And it's like, whatever you want. And again, it's that awkward blue sky problem where it's like, we don't even have the words to say what it is. The answer is, what do you want to do? And it's like, I don't know. And so, but developing the habit of just seeing what's possible, I again summoned a patient intern and I said, what are all the subscriptions that are stupid in my life or potentially stupid? What are all the orphaned ones? One of them that we found, one of the last ones to cancel so far, was there was a sneaky GPS dog collar service that we had 5 years ago that snuck in on the annual plan, charging a card that had been changed twice since then. But oftentimes they squirrel through, and this once a year little sneaky Pete made it through at $500 since we canceled it. We were finally able to stop that bleed, stop that flow. And that was just the beginning of it. In about 4 hours, I canceled $5,000 of savings through the rest of the year. That's just this year. And then who knows? And then what's funny is, as I got into the weeds of canceling more and more things, I'm like, what else you got? And it said, you might think I'm making a joke. I'm not. I'm not funning with you. I noticed that last year you subscribed to Rocket Money, and I know you did it so that you could cancel a bunch of subscriptions, but I'm here now, so you may consider getting rid of that one. And I'm like, danged if you're not right, because Rocket Money, you know what it did? It correctly documented just how insurmountable all these obligations were, and it did nothing to help me, or not enough to help me. Whereas I got so much done.
I'm borderline thinking Rocket Money is a bit of a scam, because I had to think, oh, we renegotiate your bill, and it renegotiated like my Comcast bill, and then like, oh, look at the savings, they're great, and like, now you pay us for the things we save us. I'm like, cool. Like 3 months later, my bill went up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not the thing. And so I don't know. I'm with you. Like I mentioned, I first tried this with the operator, the OpenAI's first sort of agentic sort of browser app tool, which was kind of hamstrung by a lot of problems, including, you know, the lack of a good model. And then with Codex, but there I was able to do a thing. I had it, like, with ChatGPT Atlas, I went through my AWS account because I was just getting all this weird ghost billing for services and stuff that I don't know what they do from having sometimes just spinning up like hobby projects and stuff. But they tell you, like, oh, be sure to shut it down. But it's so hard to do that. I saved several thousands of dollars of yearly billing by that going into AWS. Then when they enabled the Gmail adapters for Codex, I said, go look through my Gmail, through all of my recurring billing. And then I downloaded my Apple card statement and I uploaded the PDF. I'm like, find everything that's reoccurring, whatever, make a list of stuff that I can go through here. And I started, and that was the first thing that popped out, was I was paying $270 a month for us to host the Weird Things website and the podcast, which is stupid. And, you know, I said, screw that. I don't like WordPress anyways, as WordPress is just a security nightmare. And I said, let's just keep it simple on Cloudflare, and spent an afternoon doing others. That's one thing stupid people understand. Like, when we say we're codexing, we're giving instructions and then we're going back to doing something entirely different. We go back in, we check that it worked. We're getting a lot of other work done while the AI works in the background. And then an afternoon, I went through, ran all kinds of tests to make sure everything was fine, deleted that account, and saved, you know, saved myself over $3,000 a year. Like, you know, half a car payment. You know, our small, like a regular, like a Tesla, I was paying, if you want to get a used Tesla on a lease or whatever, it's like $300 a month. That was, I'm paying for an effing Tesla to be able to host this. And I think that everything's relative. And a lot of people are like, well, I don't have that kind of problem. I know, but you do have other billing and reoccurring stuff. You do have things that you're maybe not thinking about, like paying off credit card balances and stuff. It is a godsend. And I think that more people learn how to be able to do this, I think that people are going to find they're going to have more money. They're going to have more control over their money. They're going to understand how to plan better. And this was one of the reasons I was excited to work on AI, because I just felt like, you know, we talk about, you know, you go, what does AI, what does the future mean? Pretty much everything a billionaire has now that we could all have. Anything that a billionaire has that everybody else could have if you could just make it cheaper. We can't all have Hawaiian Islands, right? But we can all have jets and other stuff and financial advisors. And a financial advisor, one of the reasons why the rich get richer is they have other people helping them figure out their money.
Yes.
And the
hope, the wish is for somebody to be competent out of the gates. But I think it's important to note that a lot of these, a lot of the ultra wealthy, oftentimes there are people who came up with them, or they get people who start as interns, and there's a culture mismatch, and then they have to train them. Like, I think of what I'm doing every day as I document the repeat things. At the very least, I'm building a training guide for when my daughter comes down from college, but also she's going to get here and just be able to say, yeah, just have it, make sure this keeps going. Great. I mean, great. That frees me up with more time to do creative, awesome stuff.
Yeah. I would say a great starting point is, one is, you don't have to start by an accident your finance tool, but one, I would say download Codex. There are tools inside of Gmail. They're all trying to consolidate everything, which I think will be great. But Codex has just generally got what we call a harness. It's got the AI model inside of an environment. So it's the same model, but it's able to do more. Enable Gmail.
You know what? We've done this before. Maybe we could do it again, because I know it mattered to me to actually see it happen. I don't think I have anything sensitive on this one. So Codex is just a sandbox on your computer. Lately, when I'm pitching it, I explain ChatGPT is a phone queue. You get a person. And just like a phone queue in a system, sometimes they're helpful. Sometimes they understand the task. Sometimes they're not helpful. Sometimes they don't. They tell you they can't do a thing. Sometimes they misunderstand. And then finally, you're like, give me to someone else. But every time somebody picks up the phone, you got to start it all over again. Whereas in this case, with Codex, those are all like, we're going to, hey, let's get to a thing that works. And you can say, great, now write this down, lock it in, go do some research on this, check my email, pull out all of these, make this document. And then those people reach out and do blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, exactly. I've done, for me, Gmail, I connected Gmail and I just said, look for subscription. One of the things you can choose, by the way, is newsletters you don't want, just your inbox. Just literally tell it to go through my inbox and unsubscribe for everything. And then for like, yeah, I would just say, look for reoccurring subscriptions, go look for that and try it.
Yeah. Well, so let's do this. Well, actually, I don't want to build a sandcastle.
I don't know if you want to, you might not want to,
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Anyway.
I think that just, we could just sort of walk people through the steps. And the one is you can, there's a couple connectors you can do. It's available both on Mac and Windows. You can do what's called computer, which you go into a thing called computer use, and you can allow it to then control your computer, which literally takes over a cursor and go through your computer. And if it's on a Mac, you can still work in the foreground while it works in the background. Windows, it'll take over the foreground, but fine. But you can also just enable the Gmail plugins and just say, search through my subscriptions, download your bank statements, download a bank statement, anything you have that records what you paid, and just upload those PDFs and say, make a list of all the things that I'm paying for.
So I was able to, last year when I went to DEF CON and I noticed that there was not a deceptive role play environment available. So I said to the email list, I was like, hey, if you're an IT person, this is something I'm keying in on. If you want to hear more, just reply with whatever this phrase is, raise your hand. And then I didn't think about it for a year later. And then it came time to reach out to people. And I could go try to track down those emails and manually assemble a list. Instead, I was able to say literally what I just said to you in vague hand-waving terms, describe all this. Can you check my Gmail? And it came back saying, first of all, it was labeled this, and the exact phrase was this, and 173 people raised their hands, and would you like them exported as a comma-separated values? And I was like, yes, I would. And then I was able to resume contact with that specifically targeted group of people.
I'm excited because too, one of the things they're doing now is, one of the hard parts is you create something that's useful and you want to share it. So what they have coming, it's right now just in enterprise, but it'll be coming, I think, elsewhere to other paid subscriptions, is sites, which you can control access, because then you can say, hey, I have a content relation database I just created with this data. Give it to your staff and say, here, just let them have access to it. It's on the web, but it's secure. That's exciting. The analogy, I think it's like, if you had a group of developers, like, and I think the better analogy than a billionaire, what does a billionaire tech CEO have? They have the ability to ask a bunch of engineers to go build a thing for them and get it done quickly and iterate. And that's what's there now. Somebody asked Codex, is it worth it? Dude, $20 a month. 1,000,000,000,000% worth it.
Yeah. It's fundamentally, like, I would look, in general, I try not to get in the middle of anybody arguing about AI because no two people are having the same argument. I will say this much, a quick shorthand to find out whether or not we're even talking about the same thing is whether or not we're talking about Codex specifically, because there's everything else I've seen. And then there's Codex, where it is able to have a persistent ongoing conversation with a specific narrative thought where it could do specific things and put images and data in folder and files, where it could go out on the web and find this, where it can go logged in as me. And I went to lunch. So at the live stream that we did yesterday, well, look at this. I made a gesture and then it went nutty. I went out to lunch, today. Yesterday, I did a live stream that is having some success, and I wanted to track what was happening. But in order to do it, you have to do a lot of clicking around in stuff. And so I said, hey, I'm going to go. I'm logged in here. I just want you to go through and get all the data. You're going to have to take screenshots of everything and collate all of it. And so it did. And then when I came back 90 minutes later, now while I was out to lunch, I had to look at my phone and it said, hey, grant permission to do this, grant permission to do that. Great. Then when I came home, it said, so here's why the video is blowing up. Here's what accounts for this unusually high click-through rate. Here's where your traffic comes from. Here's my advice. Do this, don't do that. And then it was amazing. And that was not a thing that could happen in any way besides with codecs.
I tried just building the thing right now. I got excited and I started building a tool because trying to enhance the audio for our podcast is a pain. And so I literally told codecs to go. There's a tool that Adobe has called Adobe Enhance, which lets you upload audio files and enhance it, right? But it's not an API. You got to manually upload it.
An API would mean that a computer could directly talk to it. The only way to use it is you have to manually open the site, drag the thing over, and do in. That used to be a very good way to make sure only humans would use it.
And so I just told codecs, like I logged into Adobe. I'm like, here's the site. Just go in and drag the file and do it yourself. And it did it. So then I was like, cool. I want to build a comparison tool to basically just see, you know, what works here. And I'm going to see if I can share this. And it built me this tool that lets me compare. Oh, I don't know if you can see that. It didn't replace my window. Okay, can't share my screen. Trust me, it built a tool that basically let me compare side by side the different ways we're doing it. I just said, while I was talking to Brian, maybe zone it out a little bit. And I said, hey, build an interface that lets me compare them side by side. And then while we were talking, it spat out a whole interface that lets me compare them side by side.
You know, enhancing the audio, it can actually manually, I've got a project that involves some graphic design elements and it will physically open InDesign and manipulate stuff and render it and then look at it for aesthetic quality and then send me emails of like, this is the latest version, any notes? And it's crazy because I don't even need to log into codecs to give a response. I literally replied to the email that came from my own box. And then when it went in, it was like, oh, the user responded. Oh, he wants feedback he wants it more like this. And then it just keeps on making the changes. It was extraordinary.
Yeah. So I would say to kind of go back in scope, I would say that it is a rough tool and that it's been advancing so quickly that it's not as easy as just ChatGPT where you go in and just have a conversation. You're sometimes going to be writing code in folders, sometimes doing stuff like that if you want. I would just say you don't have to do that part. You can go in. It is a little bit of friction, and it might be a couple hours of friction. It is so well worth it in terms of overall productivity. Nobody has ever, I've ever said, go do this, has said, it was a waste of time. They've all come back with like, this was transformative. I look at things completely different now. I feel like I'm much more capable. You've never had this. There's a term we use, you know, in tech, like alpha, like this untapped potential. There is no greater alpha right now waiting for you than you figuring out just spending a little bit of time, an afternoon, a Saturday, whatever, using these tools.
Yeah, if there's one wish I have for everyone, it's look, I'm not telling you what you have to do with your intern. I'm not telling you whether or not you're going to like your intern. I'm not, you can never talk to them again. I'm just strongly encouraging you, introduce yourself, have a conversation with your intern, find out what you can make. I mean, or what are interested in, whether it's invitations for a birthday party, whether it's an update on whatever happened to, if it's a half-remembered email somewhere in the back of your Gmail bin, there is some task that you know is tedious that takes more than 5 minutes of your real time and it is below the threshold of action in your life. Throw one of those and see what happens.
Yeah. I've gone into the codecs right now and I created a project called CFO, like Chief Financial Officer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is one I wanted to get started in, a revenue, like come up with revenue ideas.
Yeah, you can do for you CRO. So like you or whatever. I mean, but it doesn't. So like what CFO, you could say, hey, your CFO, whatever, just whatever role you want. Just say, hey, what is, where can I cut my costs? Go look at my costs and tell me where I need to cut costs. Go look through my Gmail, go look through this, go look at all that. And if you're like Brian or me and you're also selling stuff or in market with anything, you can also say, come up with ideas, but not expensive ideas, smart ideas. And maybe it is maybe trying to Google ad spend. Maybe it is something like that, but also think about other stuff. I had this, I'm writing this book right now on AI use in business. And I was explaining the whole thing of like how important it is in companies of a certain size to just run experiments all the time and share the results with your employees. It doesn't matter what you're doing, that if people are really invested in each week, we tried this, we did this, it feels dynamic, it feels like your change is happening. And I said, oh, let me put an example. And I said, oh, you know, how would you treat a local hardware store like a Frontier AI lab? And it said, oh, well, you could look for this. And it said, for example, you could try an experiment one week is a shelf that's all about one-trip kits. Because sometimes people come to the hardware store and they keep coming back. And if they want to fix a plumbing problem there, it could be a one-trip kit was everything you need to fix your plumbing problem in one kit that you could buy. I was like, this is kind of genius. This is a really good idea.
Well, and I don't know how much of this is a function of us just getting up there in wisdom years, but you begin to notice similar structures regardless of what the environment, what the slice of humanity is. And I've become very interested in what are some parallels in one domain that could show up in another. And so maybe, well, like one of the pulse things that I have it doing is find comps to what I'm doing and find interesting observations, find blind spots of whether it's performance opportunities, revenue generators, new projects, and you know, let's say 9 out of 10 are garbage. That 1 in 10, man. That 1 in 10, where it's like, you know, I don't know, what lessons does what can I learn from yellow journalism that can inform the YouTube era? Or you know what? Just what I said is enough of a prompt. Like, what are some metaphors I should use to find out more things?
I just got a list of check my Gmail for any reoccurring subscriptions. And, you know, I've got a bunch from my Cinemark to all these other things that I'm paying for, you know, like my X premium account, what I'm paying Apple. I'm doing Apple Care One, Apple One Individual, iCloud plus whatever. Like I might be having some duplicate ones here.
Yeah, I found a bunch of duplicates. And get this, I had it look at all my content media subscriptions. And a lot of them, for example, it's a good thing I'm not paying for HBO Max because that was duplicated. That comes for free with my AT&T internet subscription.
No.
There's so many things like that that you don't even know.
I'm very excited about the ability of these tools because I think that very soon we're going to, in certain places, some places it'll happen willingly, in some places people demand it. We're then going to turn them to city government expenses and county government and state government. And you hear this time and again, you'll hear the Pentagon doesn't know how much money the Pentagon spends because the Pentagon doesn't have the budget to figure out how much money the Pentagon spends.
Yeah. Without naming names, a friend of mine put together he's in an industry where people have to submit a lot of design stuff that has to go through a lot of checks and scans and a lot of high touch human stuff because eventually they get turned into circuit boards and at scale. And there's an unbelievable amount of processing and scanning that takes it to do it. And he started working on turning a doodad into a layer, something that could be company wide. And he had complicated feelings in the beginning of it, because he's like, oh my God, if this works, it's going to, air quotes, put everyone out of a job. But then, of course, everything evolves. And then they just rolled out last week the new system. And he got calls from all levels of the company. And of all of them, the one that moved him the most was a lady who said that, who it turns out she was about to retire because she was over it. But now it's so easy that she rescinded her retirement package of like, if this is what I'm doing, then I'd love this job. Like it, this is now interesting to me. And in fact, he thought that all of it was going to be everyone. He thought that it would be hard to get people to get on board with the new method. But immediately the result was everybody resented the fact that they had to use the old method for the government contracts.
Yeah, I think we're going to see, we know we're going to go into a turbulent period. Some jobs just go away. Other jobs will transform and other jobs will be created. And I think the best path for that, I think, is actually speed. Like people go, oh, we need to prepare. Nobody prepares. Nobody sits around and says, so I've got 3 months till this AI thing happens. I'm going to go take night school classes and get that. That's not the way that it works. You have to go, oh, shoot, I just saw this thing happening. I need a way now to be able to get better and improve. And also, it's just the myth of prepare is, to me, is, I think, one of the catastrophic, economically, whatever, it's failed over and over time. And I argue with people about this, like, you move very quickly, you provide tools and access for people to adapt, but you don't say we're going to slow a thing down or stop to do that, because then people just say, well, why don't we just stop it forever or do that? And you arrest your economy. In that case, that's a great example, too, of like, you can say, oh, well, this is going to ruin these jobs. Maybe your job is efficiency. You work for a company. Your job is to find the maximum profit of the company, your maximum opportunity for you. You as a company is to maximize your profit, ideally by pleasing your customers. And that often means lower prices. And if lower prices means doing something more, even the same quality for a lower price, that's what you do. It means you do it with fewer people. You do it with fewer people. Guess what? We live in a market. The job of the market is the market figures out how to make them take the best advantage of human labor, et cetera. And I think that the more we get on board with that, we might find out that you just created a new opportunity. We mentioned game engines before. We talk about game engines, like in our Weird Things podcast. We forget how much a game engine changed a lot of video game design, because it used to be you had to hire a bunch of people or hire some people. Rare people were very, very good at like assembly and war programming stuff very, very efficiently at this level. The game engine comes along and basically you can have a bunch of designers and a few game people go in and go build a game. Did the game industry decline? Were there fewer jobs in the game industry? Brian, you tell me.
I mean, again, that's one of those, the gas will expand to meet the vessel that it is allotted in. And there is...
Game industry. Yeah. The game industry became bigger than domestic box office. Bigger than the movie.
By a lot. And the level of in-depth world-building storytelling is next level. G. James B. has a legit question, like, how secure is the AI sandbox? Can somebody do blah, 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 blah? All of these questions ultimately are, they have you as the hypothetical victim, and you're asking, can the bad guys do this? Can the bad guys do that? Much like I tell everyone every morning in office hours, take on the role of being the other guy, like tinker just a little bit of it. And very quickly, you realize what you should and should not be worried about. Right now, we just have a lot of us just have a big black box. And I was on the other side of this just a month ago before I bought a Mac and started tinkering with Codex. There are so many questions that you have, and it's all one big black box. So just get a little bit on the other side of it and just find a small thing to start tinkering with. Very quickly, you will get a sense of what you should and, more importantly, should not be worried about.
Yeah, and it's always ongoing. Be curious, be asking these things. I think sometimes I will hear these questions from other people that I think are in worthwhile, but they don't ask enough questions about other areas. They will, hey, I'm really worried about this thing. I'm like, cool. Have you listened to Brian talk about phishing? Are you aware of this? Where is your password? When you get the alert to change your password, do you change it? Or do you just go, I'll do it? And I think that these things are all worth doing, but if it helps people understand, or at least they just think I'm an extreme adrenaline junkie, like I use full access on ChatGPT and in Codex. I have it connected to all of my accounts, all of the things, everything. My children's 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 future, could be jeopardized by this, but I feel comfortable enough doing this.
Yeah. But, and of course, that comfort only comes from familiarity. So whatever discomfort you're feeling, instead, just substitute the word lack of familiarity with it. And you can't immediately change your comfort level, but you can immediately change your familiarity with it by getting hands-on. Yeah. And again,
yeah, and do it.
All of this is less complicated in a hands-on way than one would think.
Yeah, do it, and you do it step by step. Like, I would say that a first level of trust is, do I trust it to read my Gmail? And you can turn it off. You can say, I trust it to read my
I don't know if we lost Andrew.
Gmail, and then you say, you know what?
You were gone, but you're back.
I was saying that you could try it incrementally. Like, first step is to say, okay, I'm going to let it read my Gmail. And if I don't feel comfortable tomorrow, I'll turn it off. And so I have it plugged in my Gmail all the time. So every day I get updates, tells me about meetings, everything else like this, but it's your choice. But now that it reads my Gmail, I can say, look for reoccurring billing, look for this. Now ChatGPT has the ability to send email through your Gmail account if you're in the web app, which is cool. Now I look at a lot of my I hate the Gmail app and I get anxiety to it and I let things pile up and it affects me professionally and personally. Now that I can just go inside of ChatGPT and say, write the response here and send and do it, my life feels a lot easier. Yep. Let's see. I had to turn off my Gmail.
Audio listeners, I just flashed the 592,261 important and unread Gmails on there.
Yeah.
So when you turn on the ability to let it check your Gmail, that doesn't mean it's, you know, with motivation running around in your Gmail. It's the equivalent of opening the door and then it just sits there until you say, go find the whatever. Then it'll do something. Or you're like, every morning, go find the whatever. Or when this happens, do whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I think step by step, build trust until you feel more comfortable doing it. I can't imagine how these tools, like I said, for me, I've had a lot of moments, but getting it to save me the $270 a month on a necessary payment for a web host was just, I pay $200 a month for the pro. So like I have like this like crazy insane limits because to me it's like, yeah, it's a no brainer. And then right there, you know, I'm making $70 more a month because I use this thing.
Yeah.
Because my wife likes to use girl logic, like it pays you to use it. You know, like, well, it doesn't pay for it.
Let's not go crazy. but I will say that as a 1 month experiment, if you have the discipline to, if you're the kind of person who can subscribe to a thing and unsubscribe to it 2 weeks later, it is hard for me to believe that you can't find $200 of stupid to clear up in 1 month.
Yeah.
With the financials. You got any picks?
All right. Picks. There's a kid on, I think his name's Riley Brown on YouTube, who's done some quick start tutorials on codecs.
Okay.
I think he went from a very, let's say, antagonistic, I would say, some content about OpenAI and not quite getting it. And then he sort of saw that. You know, that I know these are people that just want to build cool tools for everybody else and look at AI as an enabler and capable, not as a god, not as a replacement, but as a thing on which we stand, whose shoulders we stand upon and do great things. And then I watched him really kind of, once Codex came out, he really embraced it. And I think he's got some really good quick starts on Codex.
Yeah. A doodad is becoming a layer. There's no value judgment in it. Nobody needs to feel threatened. I just started a book that's marketing and human behavior adjacent called Just Evil Enough. And it's got some alchemy vibes. I'll report on how it goes, but I'm very excited about it. Alistair Crawl and Emily Ross, Just Evil Enough.
I just found a bunch of stuff I'm paying for that I shouldn't be paying for WordPress.com and other stuff like this.
That's so great. Well, okay. This is the phrase that I think of every time. Like if I have minutes to spare, it's like, do you want to play Find the Stupid? Because we all know that there's some amount of stupid that we just don't have time for. And just go on a hunt. And the stupid could be your mortgage rate. It can be the services, the insurance that you're overpaying for. Like that's the fun part is the stupid. It rains all around you. Opportunity cost, education cost. Find the stupid. And, it's a great game.
And I would do too, if you can take the effort to download all of your billing statements for stuff that might not be directly in your Gmail, do it for a year because that's where you'll find the reoccurring billing, like Brian's $500 a year. $500 is a lot. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And then you get that. I've had that. I had a reoccurring billing thing came up for something I didn't use and it pissed me off. And then I canceled my card because I was trying to shut off the reoccurring billing. And it was just downstream effects just screwed up everything because all the other things, all the things that were attached to it that didn't figure out how to ignore three times your card. I had this wild idea. When you change your credit card, nothing should be able to charge you again.
Yeah. Unfortunately, legally, your commitment per contract with the vendor is independent of your card. I mean, I agree. Like we want
to
use...
What I'm saying is they should not be able to go to my card company and bill me. They should send me a notice and say, listen, you owe us this money.
I agree.
That's... You know,
but now we're just raging at the machine, which we could do. All right, we'll see you guys
later.